Hi, this is Joe Cole, and you're listening to The Blueprint.
Welcome back to the Blueprint Tapes and our two-part special with former Chelsea midfielder Joe Cole. In part one, Joe opened up on his support for Chelsea as a kid and the surreal feeling of wearing the shirt for the first time as a player.
It weren't until I made my debut, put the shirt on, and I thought, and you see the badge, you're like, wow, this is, I'm playing for Chelsea, this is mental, because I was a kid who just supported the club. You know, I know it happens, you know what I mean? And I'd played at Stamford Bridge many times for West Ham. But yeah, it was just, that was quite a surreal moment. That.
In 2004, things would get even more surreal at Chelsea. Not just for Cole and his teammates, but for Chelsea fans. Jose Mourinho arrived, the special one. And the new manager brought with him a level of swagger and know-how never before seen at Stamford Bridge or in the Premier League. It would turn Chelsea into a winning machine. But it wasn't always sunshine and blue skies in SW6, as Joe explains.
What I did notice was he cleared out all the players which probably couldn't, like, you know, Petit at the time was coming to the end of, great player, coming to the end of his career probably. You know, Stanic, another good player, but he physically probably couldn't do what he could do. Marcel would come to the end of his road. Absolute legend. So there's a lot of players that went out the door. So we was all young, hungry, fresh, and there was a viciousness to the training which I thought was I'd never seen at a football club. And there's just a fire in everyone. There was a fire and we were fit, and I thought yeah, we've got a chance here, because we were close the year before under Claudio, and I just thought, yeah, we got a real chance of doing something special.
Do you remember the first time you met him?
He was away with England, and he comes to the Lowry and spoke to the English boys, and it was me, Bridgie, Lamps, Ash wasn't there at the time, was he?
It was JT. It was all before Euro 2004.
That was it, yeah, just before. And that's when I think he told us about what his plans were for the club, you know. And Euro 2004 was, I didn't play at Euros. I went there, but I didn't play. So I was angry. You know, I was like, I'm not having this anymore. Like, I can't, you know, if I'm going to, you know, I should be playing in this team. So I come back early for pre-season, which was, he said to me, first meeting I had with him, he said, because at the time they were trying to sign Deco, who was the best number 10 in the world. So I just went straight in an office and I was like, well, what's your plans for me? He went, first of all, we said, I like the fact that you've come in early. That's good. He said, I just said to him, are you going to sign Deco? And he went, no, I'm not signing Deco. He said, because I've got you. I went, all right, okay. And he was like, but you need to do better. And then he had all these stats about me and my game. He's like, you need to do better in this department, this department, and this department. And I was like, right, okay, no one's ever told me that before. And if you do that, you'll play for me. If you don't, you won't. And I was like, music to my ears. I know what I need to do. And everyone thinks our relationship was like put it in this context, 20 years. People say to me, I always get asked, for instance, when he had the thing with Luke Shaw at Manchester United, and it was like, is it bullying? Is it, you know, because he used to dig me out in the papers and things like that as a player, and dig me out in front of the lads. And I had plenty of arguments with him in his office, you know, like, it wasn't just one way, like meek. I was... You know, and that's how it was. But certainly don't feel like, I was like, I wouldn't let anybody bully me, you know, boss or no boss. And second of all, it's football and it's tough. So I had a great relationship with him. Like, he wasn't like the relationship he had with John and Frank. I was smart enough to know that was the spine of his team. Regardless, they're going to play every minute of every game. That, you know, Drogba, Terry, Lampard, Petr Cech, everyone else was dispensable. And I knew that, you know, and that, look at the, you know, that would have been everyone, Crespo, Shevchenko, Robben, Duff, some of the biggest names of the last 20 years in world football. We was all dispensable. So there was, I understood that there was a different relationship there. You know what I mean? But I had a great relationship. I was like, I liked it. Frank, straight down the middle, tells you what he thinks. Beautiful. No problems whatsoever. Did he cross the line in the respect of now, if you looked at it from a lens of 2022-23, people go, oh, that's a bit nasty, but not a problem at all, not a problem. And it was great, and I massive respect for him, and genuinely, you know, thought the geezer was brilliant.
What did you argue over?
Well, playing football loads of times. At one point, he left me out for someone. I went straight in his office after the game, which usually the stupid thing to do. You wait till Monday morning, and we lost the game. I go, well, why are you leaving me out? Like, how can you leave me out after this? And he went, and he just, I think he just like lost. He didn't want to speak to me. He was like, fuck off, basically. Can I swear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, say what
like,
you want.
Fuck off, go away. Do you know what I mean? And he went, and then he said something like, he said, I left you out because I wanted to play him. And I went, oh, fuck it. And I was like, I should leave them. I want to leave. And he like, just proper childish. And he went, okay. You want to leave? What, you're not part of? He said, like, 20 million. I went, you think I'm worth 20 million? And he went, I went, and you've left a 20 million pound player on the bench. And then I think he just went, oh, fuck it. Just go away. Just fuck it. And then we're left. And then it was a little argument like that after the game. And then I had loads of arguments. I remember once I'm playing a game here. I went through on goal and I went to square it. I was playing well. I think I set up a goal or made a couple of playing well. And I tried to square it when I should have shot to score myself. Didn't think nothing of it. And he come in on Sunday morning when we were warming down and he just lost the plot. He was like, you'll never play for me again. You do that bullshit. Put the ball in the back of the net. You know what I mean? You're playing for the fans. You're doing this, you know. And I was like, boss, but I played well. You'll never play. And he left me out for a couple of games. And I was like, I had to fight my way back in. He could afford to treat me like that because, you know, whether I played or whether Damien Duff played or whether Sean Wright Phillips played or Arjen Robben or any of the great players that were there, it wasn't going to really affect the fluidity of the team. But Petr Cech being out or JT being out really would affect the, do you know what I mean? And that's not saying that they're not as important as them. It's just that was the spine of his team. And that's why he sort of had that. He could afford to, he was just smart. He knew how to poke the bear with me and get the best out of me.
So the 20 million argument, was that in the first season?
I can't remember, honestly.
Because I was saying, you only lost one game in the league that year. I was against Man City.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been that. It definitely weren't the first season. It would have been down 2 or 3 years down the line, maybe third season, I don't know. I can't remember. I wish I could remember, but I can't.
So because you say he would dig you out in the press, and the examples I got here was... the first game he played against Liverpool as Chelsea manager was here.
Yeah.
And do you remember he scored the winner in that game?
Yes, yeah. I know what you're saying. Yeah, scored the winner in a tight game, 1-0, weren't it? Yeah, I remember that. And then he was just all about the press conference. I remember going out straight away. I went straight out from Stamford Bridge with my pals. You think you're the bee's knee. Scored the winner in a big game, biggest game, Premier League game of the weekend. Big rivals. And then someone messaged me. I didn't think nothing of it. So now Jose said something in the press conference. Couldn't care less. I'm having a great time. I'm in the West End doing my thing. And then the next morning it was back page news. And it was like the ugly face and the beautiful face of Joe. And he's more of this and less of that. And I think it was like, it was just a shot. I think he knew it was a shot across the bows to me to say, look, you need to keep on it. Because maybe he thought that I had the capacity to switch off, which whether he thought that or whether he did, I don't know. But again, like, people made such a big deal out of it, but I didn't care. The only relationship I needed with Jose was, am I going to be playing? Are we going to be winning games? Are we going to be winning trophies? And we did. So I was happy for the majority of the time.
So did those tactics work? Because when we spoke to JT, he said, I've never felt so humbled. He stripped me back and made me feel like I was nothing.
Really? He never done that in front of the lads with JT. I don't remember him doing that.
Yeah, he said he would dress me down. He said and he made me feel so, yeah. And I was like, really? Yeah, I didn't realise that. And he goes, yeah, and we just, but then I got so angry that I'd come in and I'd train so hard and I'd go out and I'd give my best performance of the season. And then he'd message me and he'd just go, that's what I wanted from you. Mm. Go out with Tony and have a good time.
Yeah, he never messaged me. That's the difference. You know what I mean? I just got the dressing down part of it. The best, what he would do though, I remember after the Barcelona game when we won 4-2, and it was another huge game, played really well. And he made a beeline for me after the game as we were celebrating with the fans, you know, and was doing the big, you know, the big gesture, like pointing at me and like, and he was clapping the fans and excited because we'd just beaten this great Barcelona team. He'd made a beeline because he wanted the fans to know, to appreciate the performance I'd put in, because he was, you know, you see him do it with certain players. And he'd do things like that, but no, I never got a message. I don't even know if he had my number, actually.
Were you surprised when he got sacked? Do you remember where you were when he got sacked?
We were doing the DVD, the
Blue Revolution
documentary. Yeah,
Broadway.
Strange. I mean, you can understand Ranieri when he went, because we hadn't won things, but we'd be consistently winning trophies, and it was like the first time at Chelsea where you think you knew, like, oof, we need, this is the standard now. We can't even slip off for 5 or 6 games because the manager's going to get the sack. And that culture's been there ever since, really, hasn't it? You know, since that, if we could have sacked Jose in the prime of his career, no manager coming into Chelsea will ever be safe. Shocking. Lads were like, some of the lads were really emotional about it, but I never got really emotional, but like about it, I was just like, wow, that's mad. Jose's gone. Okay, what time's training tomorrow? Like, you're not from a, like, unsympathetic, you know, you don't like to see anybody lose their job. But I think a lot of the lads were very emotionally connected with him like that. Do you know what I mean? I just never got me. But I remember lads, there was tears. I've never ever seen that before or since.
Because what you're talking about there with your reaction, I guess that separates the professional from the emotional, right? Because for us as fans, when he went, you know, crestfallen, the only time I've ever felt like that was when Frank went, because Frank, I just...
As a manager.
Yeah, love, like, even when he left as a player.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, Frank, to me, is just a god,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I've worked with him.
Yeah.
And I still think he's a god. And I just, so when he went as manager, and then when he came, and like Jody as well, like, I grew up idolising Jody. I say to Jody, I'm like, when I was a kid, I wanted to be you, mate. I was like, you're my favourite, one of my favourite players ever. And he's like, really? So when they came and they left, I was just, the way they went, I was gutting. I was like tweeting Jody, like DMing him, going, Jody, I can't believe you're going.
Yeah.
So for us as fans, but that's because we're emotionally tired. So for you to say that, yeah, it was just like, when's training tomorrow with Avram? The contrast is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing is, you've got to remember is it's professional, you know what I mean? It's like, you ain't got the ability. And I say this to fans, like, we get to see, like, the theatre show behind the curtains. We see all the dirt, the grime, the rubbish, you know, and football is a murky world as well. Let me tell you, like, a very murky world. And in all of that, we all grew up wanting to play football because it was just innate and it was just beautiful and it was pure. You become a professional and you see all the rubbish behind it. And then the fans have the ability, they can be tribal because they can turn up, support their team, and it's just love and it's just passion. And it's just, you know, you probably went with your dad to watch football, and then you'll probably took children to, you know, it can be, you can afford, but as a professional player, you need to have that passion, which is what I always had as a player. I always managed to, like, I always remember going out to play, touch more when I was at Chelsea, but I'd be lying if it wasn't the same for every club, thinking I'm so lucky to be doing what I'm doing. It was easier for me to connect with that feeling of, because at Chelsea, I could literally see the seat I used to sit in a members enclosure to watch Chelsea. So it was easy for me to go, right, business on. But also on the flip side of that, you've got to be pragmatic about it, and you've got to, like, go, right, you know, I had to leave Chelsea at some point. You know, there's loads of reasons for that. And you have to put that to bed. You have to put it to bed, you know? So the professional side of it has to kick in at some point. So with Jose going, the professional side had kicked in. We got trophies we still need to win. You know what I mean? Jose's been a massive part of my career, huge part of Chelsea. I said it afterwards. I think Jose's influence on this club will be likened that to like Shankly at Liverpool. He changed his club, you know, and whatever happened in his spells afterwards, and he was still successful, varying degrees. And obviously he's gone and managed Tottenham, you know, but he'll always be special to this club, and he should be. And you've got to be able to, but it's hard for fans to, now he's been to the other side, it's hard for fans to, he's massive for this club.
So what I want to talk about is the Champions League.
Yeah.
And we spoke about the Monaco game.
Yeah.
A year after Monaco, you get Liverpool, 0-0 yeah. here, then yeah. we get the ghost goal. Was it a goal?
I think it was a goal, wasn't it? Was it?
You're not meant to say that.
Listen, when the professional kicked in, I do you know what? I can't even picture it. At the time, I thought it was a goal, but I'm at the other end of the pitch. I remember thinking, oh no, because the place just lifted up, didn't it? Was that the year I scored 1-0 in the first leg? No, that was 2009, wasn't it? When we played again, I'm thinking, oh no, I thought it was, but then your mind plays tricks on you. And do you know what? I won't watch it. I've never watched the 2008 Champions League final. Any games like that, it's like trauma, isn't it? Who wants to watch something that went as wrong as that? It was horrible. But I felt at the time it was a goal. You tell me, was it in from the footage? Is it conclusive?
Are you asking the professional or the fan, Joe?
Exactly.
It's not conclusive. No footage has ever been shown. There's never a direct side-on view.
I always think that when you look at where Galas's foot, his left foot is planted because he hooks it out.
Yeah.
His left foot is planted where he's getting enough on the ball to stop it going over the line.
Again,
it didn't look a goal to me.
Yeah.
But then I'm a fan.
Do you know what? Going back to the Monaco situation where, you know, I believe in, it just wasn't written for us during that time. It wasn't meant to be that time. Because I've not seen a footage where I've gone, that's definitely a goal. But I just, in that stadium, in front of the cop, the ref was never not going to give it, was he? Like, come on. Do you know what I mean? And they was miles off us as a team. You know, so the only way they would beat us that night was they were playing much higher than we'd beaten them three times that year. And they were playing at a level that they'd never played at that team that night, because we were at it as well. And it was like a chess game. And that was probably one of the lowest I'd been after that game, you know, in the dressing room. I'd done the drugs test afterwards with, so that's even worse. It's like, you know, rubbing salt in the wounds, because you've got to sit there and you can hear them from the celebrating. So it was horrible, horrible night.
Who did you do the drugs test with? Who was the Liverpool player?
Harry Kewell, who I must say was fantastically well behaved for someone who just made the Champions League final. Really respectful. So, shout out to Harry on that one.
Were you having to drink some beers? Because normally on the drug test, because you're dehydrated from playing, you have to drink a beer to push it through a bit, didn't you?
The beers were being drinking for other reasons, drowning sorrows, yeah. But yeah, it was horrible.
The crazy thing is that you get the first Champions League final with Avram.
Yeah.
What was Avram like? Because we used to see him coming in into the shed end, right where Chelsea TV is.
Yeah.
And the lift had opened and he'd come out. And he was so dishevelled and he'd be leaning up against the door.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, he's Jose. He's just replaced Jose.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, Avram, unfortunately, doesn't look like how... Jose Mourinho was this young, suave, good-looking epitome of a football manager, a leader. Avram had a different look about him. But one thing I would say about Avram, the smart thing he done, which he'll never get credit for, is he let the dressing room manage it. Everyone goes, you know, he was smart. I bumped into Avram in Dubai a couple years ago and he was sharp as a tack. He knew, I was chatting to him, why did you make that decision? He'd be a great interview. He knew, he told me, run me through all of the decisions he made on that run, why he did them, and he was on it. So I think optics play a part with Avram, but the smart thing he done was he understood the value of John Terry, Michael Ballack, Frank Lampard, Drogba. The dressing room was the strength at Chelsea. We knew how to train. We'd been 4 years of success. We should have won the Champions League before 2008. We were the best side in Europe, in my opinion. But just for the gods, that it weren't meant to be, which can happen in knockout football. So that he was smart, Avram, in that sense, you know. But ultimately, we've come up against probably the best team I'd ever played against in the Premier League era. Maybe this Man City team now can compete with them. Our team can certainly compete with them but on that night, it was the width of a post, you know, and it was heartbreak. It really was, because I felt we matched them that night. Again, I wouldn't watch it again. I wouldn't put myself through that. But I felt we were the better side slightly on that night. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh,
maybe
much better side.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And so we were the better side on that night, and I felt we got the better of them most of the time we played against them. And when you think about how good that team was, Rooney, Tevez, Ronaldo, all in their prime, Giggs, Scholes, Carrick, Ferdinand, Vidic, just great side. You know, but again, it just wasn't meant to be. John Terry in Moscow, the Russian owners, captain, been there since he was a kid. I've never seen JT slip. Never, ever, ever in my life. And he slipped. And then from that moment, they felt like they're deflated. I think you could have had Lionel Messi stepping up for us for a penalty, and the goalkeeper could have been 3 inches tall, and we'd have found, the universe would have found a way. It just wasn't our night that night. Chelsea's night was 2012, and that was when I think that was when it was just meant to be for the club, for one reason or another. But yeah, that was a real, that semi-final and Moscow final were the lowest I've felt in my career. It was a tough, tough pill to swallow.
Would you have had a penalty that night? Because you got taken off 99 minutes.
For an Elka?
Yeah.
I was taking it. That was my number. You know, we had a lot of penalty take. And I'd never taken a penalty up to my... I even can tell you where I would have gone. Do you want to know where I would have gone?
The way that an Elka went?
No, the other way. Genuinely, that's my side. I would have done it that side. Never taken a penalty. So I thought, right, Van der Sar would have had... He wouldn't have known where I was going to go. I'd scored a few past him. Actually, we played at Fulham. I scored a couple of goals. So I thought, right, you know, you think about these things the night before. Avram asked me and Clarkie asked me if I'd take one. I'm like, how can I be an attacking player and not take one? I was 28, 29, wherever I was. I'd never taken a penalty in my career because, you know, Frank took them. Paolo Di Canio took them at West Ham. But I would have took one and I would have gone the other way. But it wasn't meant to be.
That year, though, was a good year for you because you were player of the year.
Yeah, man. And again, that was nice, you know. Personal accolades are nice, you know, but they're not the ones you look back on. Like winning the titles at Chelsea were the ones that, you know, where it feels what it's about. I mean, the first title against Charlton, when we already won it at Bolton, but we had the Champions League game. And that was the only time really I'd felt really emotional in a game of football. Because when the final whistle went, for some reason we'd already won it. But with it being at Stamford Bridge and the final whistle went and when it's going to give us the trophy, and I just felt like I had to sort of compose myself a little bit, because, you know, you have to remember that I'd been there from a young age and seen lots of football there and dreamt of winning that title and doing it in your own kit, your own colours, you know. And like I said, those moments were my moments. The personal accolades are great. They're great. They're on your, you know, Chelsea Player of the Year, whatever. But the team ones were the ones that meant the most.
Because that Player of the Year, I know when we were setting this up, I said to you in messages, I was working on the magazine. Yeah. And after the Player of the Year, it was in they call it the Great Hall, but it's the concourse for the West Stand, right? And I took you out and we sat in the West Stand.
Right, yeah.
And do you remember Dom? Dom's the tall guy, did the notes and all that.
Yeah.
And Dom just sat with us because he was based out of Cobham. And I did the interview with you about it, and it was Euro 2008 coming up.
Yeah.
And Marcel came out.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, Marcel was presenting it, weren't he?
Yeah, and we were chatting and we were doing the interview, and I was a bit like, but he kept jumping in. I was like, how do I tell Marcel that you're killing my moment interviewing the Chelsea Player of the Year? You know? I've still got this audio on a dictaphone.
Yeah.
And but then I remember Marcel just saying to you, like, Joe, it's Euro 2008. How the fuck are England not there? And he goes, I'm doing punditry. And I remember him saying, Joe, I'm going to put you in a suitcase and take you with me because you should be in
you
should be in Austria.
Well, that's another bloody story. That again, that was That was a weird one. That England spell under Steve McClaren was just weird. Like, we'd got to four quarterfinals. I'd have been to 2002, 2004, 2006. And it just, sometimes I can't explain it, honestly. You go back and look at the goals we conceded. You know, Paul Robinson, Scott Carson, Rob Green. We was changing goalkeepers. They're all top goalkeepers. They all should be able to save. I think if they look at their careers, they won't have let in goals like they let in goals that game, that tournament. And then we just found ourselves at Wembley getting beat by Croatia in a game we should. I remember Crouchy scored to make it 2-4. And it was like, we've got through by the skin of our teeth here. And then they had no shots on target and nothing. And then Petrić, I think it was, hits one from 40 yards. And Scott Carson just like fumbles it in. I'm like, it's just not meant to be, just mental. And then you had the Wally and the Broly with Steve, weren't you? And who again is a lovely fella, but I just think that came a bit too early in his managerial career. But yeah, that was insane that we didn't get there. And I can't explain it, other than, like, I can't explain how Chelsea didn't win the Champions League from 2004 to 2010 when I left, because I'm convinced we was as good as anything there was in Europe during that spell.
Going back to Marcel, it was incredible seeing it, because it was like witnessing the dressing room almost, that we don't get to see. Yeah. We don't have that privilege. We think we're close, but we know we're not close, right? We're still like a few steps removed.
Yeah.
But it was almost, and the way he was jibing, but then I remember him saying to you, he goes, it's your time now, Joe. This is your club. And it's stuff I remember, because to me, I'm like, I'm meant to remember this stuff. Yeah. You probably get that's a lot, right?
Yeah.
But I just remember Marcel and Dom and I were chatting after, and I was just like, God, I was like, Marcel was just there. And
Marcel's great. I mean, from Marcel's perspective, he's seen me sign in 2003 as a young player. Think of all the clubs he's played for, Chelsea and AC Milan, all the players that he's seen come through at clubs and then be gone after a year or two, you know, because there's not a lot of players can't live at that altitude at them top clubs. And he probably looked at me and probably thought, is he gonna be able to hack it if we're going for Champions Leagues and winning titles? Then he's come back as a retired player and he's presenting me with Player of the Year in 2008. You know, I think at the back end of my career, I was lucky, you know, as I was coming down the levels, you know, for injuries and whatnot, I played with Jack Grealish, James Maddison, Raheem Sterling as well. And, you know, when you see young players and you have an affinity with them, you want to see them do well. You have a sense of pride. So maybe Marcel was thinking, yeah, well done. You know what I mean? I didn't expect you to still be here, sort of thing. But, you know, you done great.
Do you remember your last goal for Chelsea was against?
Manchester United.
The swivel.
Yes, yeah. Again, as a story about that goal, Sven actually came to training that day for one reason. Day before the game, I remember seeing Sven, and it was 2009, so he'd left England, and, you know, chatting away with him, blah blah blah. And then last minute of training, I pulled my back, and Carlo, I'd come back from injury that season, so I wasn't regular. There was a spell.
You played 42 games in that season.
Did I? Wow.
But a lot of them were off the bench.
Yeah, because I didn't get back till November or something. Did I? Am I right in saying that? Yeah.
But you'd done your knee. I was at the game at Southend.
Yeah.
Anthony Grant, Chelsea Academy player.
Yeah, my knee was hanging by a thread by that time, but that's another story. But I thought Carlo had been saying to me, Joe, you're going to, you know, I played well in the spells in that season. When the lads went off to the African Nation Cups, I made a big impact and we'd won every game. We won, I think I played 6 or 7 starts games in a row. And then, but I hadn't made had a big moment in that season, and it was up against us. We wasn't playing great, but Carlo said, he was like, you're going to have a big moment for us in this season. You know, he had a great way of managing his players. And I thought, right, this is it. Title deciding game. I'm playing at Old Trafford. I got the shirt. He told me I was playing. Pulled my back. And I literally couldn't walk. I said to the physio, I grabbed him and went, I'm walking off. Sven wants to talk to me, but I'm in such agony. I just want to get in. I don't even want to tell Carlo I'm hurt, because I don't want to give him the opportunity to leave me out, because I'm playing regardless. Even if I broke my back, I'm playing tomorrow. And I was in pain. I got into the physio room, took the painkillers, and I said, listen, you need to, I just wouldn't accept it. I was so angry the fact my body was starting to let me down a little bit. And I was like, and not today. I said, not tomorrow, not when we go in there. We have to win the league. He went, listen, Joe, he said, and he worked with me for 2 hours in the pool. just loosening it off, loosening it off. We took as much painkillers and anti-inflammatories as you can without wrecking your insides. Literally, I couldn't walk onto the plane, but I got my poker face on as we're going to Manchester. I'm like, it's really agony. Every step was painful. And then went straight up to his room, worked for 3-4 hours, just massaging, getting it rid of it. Had dinner, did the same, woke up the next day and I'm still in pain, but I thought, right, I'm playing. Because I just had a feeling I'd have a moment. Do you know what I mean? Hadn't had one that season yet. And then was the first goal, weren't it? It was just a come run across Evra, flicks it in. Again, I don't think we played particularly well that day. We was just good defensively, but we was never going to lose, if you know what I mean. I don't know. Then Didier scored, and I knew the title was ours after that day. But the next 3 days, oh, I was in tatters. I was in such a bad way.
Did Carlo find out?
I don't know if he has now. The physio, yeah. I don't know if the physio would have, I think they would have had to tell him, but it's how he was a good lad, the physio, and he felt, and he done a great job that day. That's why he put the work in as well as I did. So, you know, that was, but I couldn't walk for a few days after that. Yeah, it was tough, but amazing. That was a great day.
You talked about there was a viciousness in training under Jose.
Yeah.
What does that mean? And
for fans, you know, there's an undertone of competitiveness through every football club. That's why I respect anybody who makes it as a professional footballer, particularly at the top level, because it's such a tough, you know, there's tackles flying in. You know, you're walking out with training and when you could be with your mate, who you love, you have a great time, but you know there's only one shirt for you on Saturday and you're going to be the one that did, and you've got to outperform him, and you'll do anything you can to win that battle. And it was just the tackles were flying in, you know, crashing in. I remember JT had a bad toe, right? And usually the captain of the club would go, the manager would go, you're playing at the weekend. Like, don't worry about it. JT was getting injections in his toe to train because he thought, I don't want to even give the manager to look at Cavalio and Gallas as a two and think, well, that's quite, maybe I'll give that a go. And that's the fear it had in you. If you didn't turn up and you didn't train and you weren't at it, you'd be out. So the vicious, that's what I say by viciousness, just that hype. Some people probably describe it as a high performance environment. That's probably the correct terms, but I just found it was vicious. Yeah.
So do you think all of this was Mourinho doing things that you'd never experienced before from a manager in trying to create this sort of toughness within his players?
I think there's probably an element of that. There's probably an element that the training naturally gravitated because it was all competitive. Everything was set up to where, you know, it was one team on, one team off, small-sided, you know, bang, win, lose or draw, off, bang, you know what I mean? And then the standards were driven by the players. You know, like I said, little things like JT not having, I'm not saying that, I've never even thought of that in this context, but JT having an injection to train, that's the captain. Nobody can take a day off. You cannot take a day off. And there's a lot of players who come into that club at that time and left. Think of every player that played that couldn't hack that level of competition every day. They're probably best suited for a club where they can have a few little down days and peak at the weekend. And I think that's just the demands that he set.
That game when he hoiks you early.
Yeah.
How did you feel about it? Because it did provoke outrage amongst fans, media, everything.
Yeah, I mean, I was angry, very angry. I smashed the dressing room up at Craven Cottage. This is our two, me and Wrighty, wasn't it? The two different characters. Wrighty was like, oh man. And I love Wrighty. He was like, relaxed, he's chilled. He's like, yeah. We got into the dressing room, he's like, you know. And I was just smashing, I smashed the massage table over. I was angry. I thought, why? As a footballer, there's certain games that you can't get into. The play that I played, the game would dictate sometimes. You know, I don't remember playing particularly bad. I remember not getting a lot of the ball, and the game would dictate that. It was a frenetic game, and you knew the game would open up. You know, but he did it, and I wanted to throttle him effectively, but then you calm down. If someone else would have been in there, would have calmed me down. And then right, okay, then the professional kicks in. You know, I can't make a scene now. We've got a game to win. We ended up losing the game. So that sort of, as bad as it sounds, that sort of validates you as the player that gets brought off. You know, it's not something, I don't know why he did it, is the answer. We wasn't playing great, but he could have wicked off anybody. We wasn't playing great, but it was a frenetic part of the game. Other than he may have felt that he picked the wrong team. He wanted to start with someone else. And then that's more of a, maybe he, I don't know. You just don't know with Josie. But we're talking about the standard set. He never let anyone get comfortable. That would have been on my mind for the next, every game I played under him, that I cannot start slow in any game because he's always capable of doing that. And I played worse for Chelsea in the 20 minutes and he'd left me on, so that was a strange one.
What does Joe Cole, the fan, think of Joe Cole, the Chelsea player?
Oh, great player. Great player. what does Joe Cole, the fan, think of Joe Cole, the Chelsea player? Would I have liked him? That's a great question. I would have liked, yeah. I try. Well, what players do I like watching at Chelsea? I've got season tickets at the West Stand. I sit with my boys when I'm not working. I like watching players I see committed to the cause, regardless of, you know, whether they're the ability. I like watching Conor Gallagher. I like watching Levi Colwell. I think he's part of it. I like Gusto, the right back. I like players. Do you know what I think I would have liked? Don't think of me as what you see when it was all going well. All the, you know, the flicks, the tricks, the moments where you get the fans on their feet. I'd like to think that the fans remember me for when I wasn't playing well, but I was digging in. Do you know what I mean? I think, you know, no players plays well all the time, you know, and I had a great time at Chelsea and won things and I wouldn't change it for the world. But I think I'd like to be, I'd admire myself for the hard times more than the good times. Do you know what I mean? And there was more good times than hard times, but I like players like Connor, for instance, when it was going terribly wrong last year, and I was at every game watching it as a fan, and he was our best player. And it was simply because he just was like, he was just at it, and he would not, you know, and I think the fans, every club I've gone to, I've always got on well with the fans because I think they can see that. They know the body language, and I've always given everything as well as the other attributes I've got. So to answer your question, I think I'd admire my tenacity more than anything else. Is that a good answer?
Yeah, I like that. Okay, last question then. What was your relationship like with the fans?
My relationship like with the fans? The Chelsea fans, the relationship was more special than any other club because I'd walked in their shoes. You know, I'd gone to cup finals we'd won, I'd gone to cup finals we'd lost. So I felt a responsibility. So I'd probably, I felt more, I was, you know, I was lucky enough. There was always an affinity with the fans. Like, I always felt supported by them, and I'd always give everything I had at any given time, whether it was, you know, with the quality I had, or whether it was just with like, what can I give, you know? And so it was always a good relationship. Yeah. And it still is.
Excellent. Well, all I can say is thank you for all the years of pleasure you gave us.
Thanks for all the support from everybody. Who knows what's around the corner one day? Who knows? Maybe I'll be, I'd love to be one day back working, well, not back, one day working with the first team, you know, because is that buzz, you know, that is something that in life you can only get by doing that. And I'd like to do it there one day, but who knows where the road will take us.
Did you hear that, Mr. Bowley?
Mr. Iqbali.
Yeah. Mr. Iqbali.
Yeah.
the Blueprint Tapes will return with more insight from the key voices who have shaped Chelsea's modern history. You've been listening to a Chelsea Sideline Club podcast. The full credits for this series can be found in our show notes. For more content like this and to join our growing community of Chelsea fans, become a Chelsea Sideline Club member on Apple Podcasts or via our website, chelseasideline.club.